is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant, and that Days of Our Lives theme song, Lydia, reminds me of actually a hip-hop track. Yeah, that's right, Craig Mack. Of original Puff Diddy protege once had an entire rap song done to that bass line, which, yeah, is pretty impressive, called Real Raw. Some quite forgettable lines in there, however, Paul.
You're way cooler than me, because I just started thinking of the Young and the Restless theme song.
Bling, like, bling, bling, bling. Yeah. Yeah, one of the lines in there is, I'm grotesque, forget it, girls still rub my chest. That's correct, that Craig Mack intones. It is Danny and Gallant, and the price in free agency, it started to go up, actually. And that is before free agency even happens. If this would be the first warning sign that a stock analyst would be looking, what kind of market are we going to have? It looks like the Bulls are going to run roughshod through the NFL. DJ Humphreys, you familiar with him, Paul?
No.
Yes, you are, because you recalled at an offensive tackle from the Arizona Cardinals earlier this season talking about and boasting that he hadn't given up a sack all year and there was nobody playing better than him.
That was him?
That's correct.
Oh, boy. Well, it's not a good sign that I forgot his name.
DJ Humphreys, who is a former first-round pick who has had an injury-pocked 5 seasons in the NFL, is going to sign for $15 million a year. That deal was first reported. And the first thing that I thought was, Jermaine Ifedi cannot wait for the opening bell. Because if that guy's getting $15 million, he's going to wonder if he's going to get at least 12 or 13. The bar is getting raised very high, very early in free agency at that position.
He gone then. And I think we've been under this assumption, Danny, for a couple of weeks now. So what do you do at right tackle? Because if you want to get a free agent, you are probably going to have to spend more than the Cardinals just did on DJ Humphreys.
I'm not worried about right tackle. I'm worried about Jadeveon Clowney. And let me explain how I get there. Because once you get to free agency, you don't know what the market's going to look like. This is the first sign that there's going to be money being thrown around. There's some quarterbacks in there that are going to eat it up. But the worst case scenario for Seattle is that there is multiple teams bidding on Jadeveon Clowney, and he is going to be able to command the highest the contract for a defensive player in the NFL. Because what you worry about in free agency is the bidding competition drives a guy up beyond where you're not paying what he's worth. You're paying what he can get. And it's a weird thing in the NFL market where the best players don't often get to free agency. I don't think anybody has a real good gauge on what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney's price once he gets in, but he knows he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. And I look at it, I'm like, if DJ Humphreys got $15 million, if tackles are going to be going for 12 plus million on the open market, what's the best pass rusher that's available going to be going for?
It's a great question, and I think that his sack number could be held against him, but some team is going to throw stupid money at him, and we're going to find out just how real Clowney was being when he said that, I ain't playing for no bleep team, because last year, when he did not sign his franchise tag, he essentially held a no-trade clause, and he pretty much flat-out refused to play for the Miami Dolphins. But the Dolphins, going into this season, were on another scale of rebuild. They were perhaps supposed to be one of the teams that would be the worst in NFL history. I think there were some people that actually thought it might be realistic for them to go 0-16. How far up, when it comes to a price point and competition level, do you get when Clowney actually starts to listen to one of those teams that might throw money at him?
Yeah, it's a great question. And here would be what Seattle needs to answer right now is, are they going to bid on Clowney or are they going to set a price? Are they going to go into it with the impression that we've got to have this guy back and we're going to pay what it takes? Even if it is, are you willing to make him the highest paid defensive player in the league if that's what it takes to keep him? Or are you going to set a value and you're going to kind of stick to that and you're going to hope that he comes to you. You're going to hope that, hey, all things being equal and we've got a competitive price that's out there and we've got a good place for you to play. Because the danger, Paul, when you said, and you're right, last year, he was able to say, I don't want to go to Miami. he was basically guaranteed to get that money from somewhere.
Right.
If he played, he knew what salary he was going to get. And not only that, but it was only for 1 year. So you can be choosier at that point, right? Do I want to take my $17 million from Miami, or do I want to take my $17 million from Seattle? This is going to be a different opportunity. This is going to be, he has waited a long time to get into unrestricted free agency, and it's going to be, do I want to take $23 million to on a 5-year deal to go to Cleveland? And Cleveland's probably not the best suitor for him in this category, but you're going to have some teams. You're going to have teams that are going to be willing to overspend because they're like, hey, you know, the only way we get a player like this is you pay more than anybody else will. And we try to money whip him into joining us.
So the question is, bidding war, or do you set a price? It depends on what their strategy is in free agency. I think that you set a price if you feel that you need to address multiple positions in free agency, and that you go into a bidding war if you feel like, yeah, you know, the only thing that we definitely want back is Jadeveon Clowney. And I suppose they have to answer that question. What do you think they would answer that question, Danny? Like, do you think that they want to get more than just Jadeveon Clowney in free agency? Because Russell Wilson clearly wants more than that in free agency.
Yes. My answer about what I think the Seahawks will do, which isn't necessarily what they should do. What I think the Seahawks will do and what their history has been is that they are going to have a price, and they're going to, they've got a limit to where they're going to go. And I don't think that they're willing to make him the highest paid defensive player in the league to keep him. I don't think they're willing to go to that limit. The danger of taking that approach is that, well, you might lose him. And then are you going to be able to recoup what you don't get? Are you going to be better off if you get multiple players to fill his spot? So that question of should they is a very valid one, because look, the reason he's going to go and make so much money is no one else is going to see a suitable, that he is a different caliber of player than all the other guys you're going to get there. That's the reason. You're not going to get a better player for less money in free agency unless you take a risk and get lucky. It would take you getting lucky to get a better player than Jadeveon Clowney.
Exactly. So I would get into the bidding war. I've said this before. I understand that the sack number is not where a lot of people want it to be, but you know what he is. You know that he liked it here. You know that he fit into your defense, and you wonder what he would look like if he knows the defense going into the season as opposed to figuring it out on the fly after being in the 3-4 for such a long period of time, figuring out a new variant of the 4-3 that he was in, where he's being lined up in spots that he was a lot more comfortable with. And I think as the season progressed, we saw what he could potentially be. If you don't have him too, Danny, that's the other question. How far back does the defense go? And we've talked about that before. This wasn't a very good defense last year.
No, it wasn't. And that's really the biggest. I don't believe that you should spend money to keep a bad team intact, but you don't get better by losing your best players. And Jadeveon Clowney was one of your best players last year when he was healthy. And not only that, he showed something playing through injury.
Yeah.
I think that's significant. I think that you feel that he likes playing here. And I think I do lean toward, man, you've got to get it done. And so I'm holding out hope that that is the approach that they take. They have done that before. 2013 with Michael Bennett. They signed Michael Bennett to a 1-year contract. They negotiated with him headed into free agency. And they kind of kept it open that, hey, well, keep in touch. Let us know what you get. And they ended up matching the offer that Chicago had given him to keep him. So there are press. That was $8 million a year, not what could be $21, $22 million a year. So but I would say, I do feel that this is a player that they should keep. I think that, and whatever you need to do, whether it's offering a shorter term deal at a higher salary, whatever you need to do, I don't think you're going to get better as a defense after losing Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, you're losing a guy that really creates matchup nightmares at the line of scrimmage, and he's also a guy that should, theoretically, help everyone else out around him. That did not happen this past season, and you could point at Jadeveon Clowney as not having enough of an impact last season, but I'm going to point at Ziggy Ansah. I'm going to point at Jaren Reed not taking advantage of it. I think that's on them. I think we saw from Quentin Jefferson at times and Rasheem Green at times, there's maybe something with those guys. At least they could be rotational pieces, but the guys who we thought were going to be actual contributors this year didn't do enough. So, I mean, I think that's why I don't think we're going to see Jaren Reed on this team next season either.
Did he have as many touchdowns as sacks? Is that correct? I think he did score two touchdowns.
Yeah, two
and
touchdowns.
Had two sacks. That's
really funny. I don't know if I've seen a defensive player have a stat line like that. Well, that's as good as Jadeveon Clowney is.
We know that you pay defensive players for touchdowns. I mean, right? Isn't that why primetime got paid?
I'm going to tell you what. Like, that is the goal, is to take the ball away. Yeah. And if you could take the ball away and score, ask the Seattle Dragons, right? Their inaugural victory comes thanks to what was one of the more unprecedented. I believe that happened right in front of you, Paul.
Oh, it did. Yeah. You know what? And so someone called me out on Twitter for being a classic youngster, quote, youngster, because I was holding the phone. I actually caught it all, like, on my smartphone. Like, I was doing, like, a little panoramic shot, and I zoomed in as the play began. Boom. Nailed it. So, fantastic photography. But, yeah.
It's compared to Wyman, who did not stand up. I believe was still seated.
That same person also took issue with Wyman sitting down and not getting up and standing and cheering, which honestly, I mean, come on, Wyman, live a little.
It's Danny and Galan. It's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10, brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Galan.
Dragons did. They won their home openers, we just told you, 17-9 over the Tampa Bay Vipers. I'll tell you what, the two teams' uniforms looked really good. The presentation on TV looked fantastic. It looked full. It looked excited. Announced attendance over 29,000. Three touchdowns, two of them scored by the defense, but it was a good game.
Allow me to pander here. The Seattle crowd brought it. You guys were awesome. It was loud. The towels waving in orange in critical moments was, I thought, a truly cool sight to see. The in-game stadium experience was a pleasant surprise. I really enjoyed it. I did not think people would be as up for it as they were. They did a great job in big-time spots. The only frustrations, Danny, that I had were that quarterback play, yikes, and that also it was a little difficult to acquire beverages.
That might be because they had more people than they anticipated.
I think
so. Actually a really good sign.
Right. It's a really good sign. So I'm looking forward to the next time that they are playing at CenturyLink. It was a really good time, and I hope that the crowd is able to match what it did on Saturday.
What to watch for.
Can we stop talking about your dogs, Danny? They stink.
They're terrible.
They're awful. They led by 12 early in the second half and got outscored 40-18 over the final 18 minutes and lost 67-57 UCLA over the weekend. Yikes, dude.
Just don't include Isaiah in this discussion.
I agree. And that's the weirdest thing. It's the same thing that happened with Markelle Fultz, right? We're like, they're terrible, but Markelle's not bad. Isaiah Stewart's the same way. This is awful. Look, I enrolled at the University of Washington in 1993. And it was a Bob Bender's first year. It was an awful team. Their best two players were redshirting. It was horrendous. They gave us free pizza for the loudest section from Pizza Time. They also had Pepe, the little Dick's hamburger boy, who would run out flinging Dick's cheeseburgers into the crowd, and they did not charge admission to students. I think all three of those things need to come back if this team is going to be that bad. Free student admission, pizza giveaways, Dick's hamburgers being flung into the crowd by Pepe.
Pepe. Interesting. Okay, yeah, I, at this point, I mean, I'd rather that happen to me when we talk about them and what to watch for every single time, too. Can someone throw hamburgers at me? I mean,
did you see what happened? They got outscored 40-18 over the last 18 minutes of the game. 40-18.
Are you forcing yourself to watch this?
Oh, absolutely hate watching it.
Hate watching? Oh, fun. So what moments do you enjoy whilst hate watching?
Well, no, I don't. At no point.
It's just all
because as they build the lead, I'm like, oh, they're going to just give this up in most heartbreaking fashion. They do seem to be getting closer and closer, though, to getting to the point where they might actually win this one. And then nope, perpetual disappointment.
Yeah. Oh, man. I don't know what you do when you get all those recruits as a program and it just blows up this spectacularly, like what your approach is going forward and if you change the way that you go about doing things.
Well, look, this is the end of the line for Lorenzo Romar, because this is how many times that he's gotten all these one-and-done talents together.
Danny, come on. Danny, you're better than this.
I'm really not.
What to watch for.
Hey, the Mariners have their first full squad workout today. Shannon Dreher from 710sports.com already out on the scene to interview Evan White.
That's great. I saw Shannon out there this morning. I'm interested. Is that your starting first baseman? Very well might be. We've seen the pitchers running around throwing. I saw some movement on Justice Sheffield's. I've taken Ryan Divish's posting video from of the bullpen sessions. I'm now watching video.
Riveting.
What do you think the best sound of spring training is? Is it metal cleats on concrete? Like that click, 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 click?
No.
Is it the pop of a catcher's glove when it catches a good fastball? Just that snap. Like where it's just you hear there's that pop. That's, or is it the crack of a bat?
The crack of a bat is fantastic, but let's be honest, Danny. The best thing that can come out of spring training is people just taking unprovoked shots at the Houston Astros. Actually, check that. Provoked shots at the Houston Astros based off all the cheating that they've been doing.
Fair point.
I've enjoyed that. It's been amusing. I mean, it's just nonstop. I don't think it's ever going to stop.
It's probably not. It is now time for our morning commute with John Clayton. He joins us for the morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
All right, John, we've kind of got our first free agent contract, although I know DJ Humphries wasn't a free agent. He was scheduled to be. It's 3 years. It's $45 million. That's an awful lot of money for a guy who's missed one of his five seasons because of injury, and in the other 4 years that he did play, missed one out of every three games because of injury.
Yeah, and I don't think he's the best blocker in the world. I mean, I think there's no question it was an overpriced commodity coming back, but I think that you can hear from Steve Keim, who was on radio on Friday, basically saying that they needed to get this done. I mean, left tackles are hard to find, and he did get better in his last 2 years, but yeah, it's like $15 million a year. It just shows you how pricey things are going to be in free agency and in re-signing, and now they have to see what else they can try to do, but that was more expensive than I thought. I mean, I had them probably at the $12, $13 million level, but to take it to $15 was pretty huge.
John, Keim also said that David Johnson is basically untradeable. Like, they can't move him because of how ridiculous his contract is. You would think that the Cardinals would have maybe learned from that. This does seem to be an extreme reach when it comes to a guy that was okay as their starting tackle.
Yeah, but I mean, that's somehow why you have to kind of justify it, because again, it's like, okay, so where are you going to find that? And I think you can see that, I think he's given up like maybe 30 pressures a season in the last couple of years, each year. And then, they've got so many issues to do on defense. And I guess the strategy was, okay, yeah, we did overpay David Johnson. We're stuck with him. We now got too much money tied up at the running back position. And, in some ways, they even overpaid some of the guys on their offensive line. I mean, Pugh hasn't been a great guard for them at the money they're paying him. But, hey, their option is, it's like, we got to concentrate on getting guys on defense. And so because of that, they weren't going to draft somebody in the first round, even though it was a good draft for tackles.
John, I saw a report that the Raiders are willing to offer Brady $60 million over 2 years. I don't necessarily think that's enough to get it done, do you?
No, I think it has to be more than that. I mean, he's not, because even the story came out in the Super Bowl that the Patriots were willing to pay him $30 million. So if he's going to go someplace, it's got to be more than that. So you'd have to think it's going to be somewhere, because Ben Roethlisberger is making $34 million. Jared Goff is making $34 million. I would have to think if Tom Brady's going to leave and go to someplace, he's not going to go for less than what Jared Goff did. Sure, he gives the discounts to stay in New England. I don't think he goes for a discount if he goes to Vegas.
I saw a report that Teddy Bridgewater could be looking for the same kind of money. Is that ridiculous?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because I know that's the going price right now, and I know that Jameis Winston wants more than $30 million. I mean, we'll see if Ryan Tannehill wants $30 million, but that seems to be the going rate. I mean, you got Dak Prescott turning down $33 million last year, but not everybody's going to be able to pull that kind of clout to be able to get $30 million. I think Teddy has to do something in the 20s.
What's going to happen with the quarterback market? We've just mentioned four or five guys who've in some degree got a level of uncertainty about their future. And you've got a bunch of mediocre quarterbacks or possibly mediocre quarterbacks, and someone like Bridgewater, who hasn't been a full-time starter since, 2015?
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for $30 million. If I was a team, if I was the Titans, I would tell that Ryan Tannehill, like, hey, $24 million, $25 million, that's fair. That's probably more than fair. And if not, I'm going to go look for a college quarterback in the draft.
Yeah, but you know, it's going to be a crazy market when you look at free agency. I mean, the top five signings are all going to be, as far as money, all going to be quarterbacks, and where the everybody goes is going to be uncertain. I mean, I think with some degree of certainty, you know, we're getting more and more word that Phillip Rivers will probably go to Indianapolis if he doesn't go to Tampa Bay. You know, that would make sense, and it looks like the Chargers aren't going to be doing too much at quarterback other than drafting one and keeping Tyrod Taylor. But everything else is up for grab, and again, the price of quarterbacks just get higher and higher and higher, and then we'll find out if they can get something done with Dak Prescott, or he has to be franchised at $27 million.
The Panthers are another one of those teams where we're not sure what's going to happen at the quarterback situation going forward, and they've been really just, I think, coy in their handling of Cam Newton's future. It's very, very uncertain as to where he'll be next, but the Panthers did say they think he'll pass a physical and be cleared for football activities in March, and they also said that they would limit his off-season work. Is there any percentage of chance that this guy comes back with Carolina with the way that they seem to be going in a completely new direction?
There's a chance, but I still think it's unlikely. I think that they're going to probably move on just because, you know, the injuries over the last couple years. You now got a college coach that may want to have somebody a little bit younger at the quarterback position. And so when you got an owner in David Tepper who, you know, you can see he doesn't seem to be totally on board on Cam because of the injuries and the past. I mean, when asked last week, you know, he responded by saying, well, you let me know if he's going to be healthy or not, and I can let you know after that. So, yeah, I think they're going to try to move on. Now the question be, which way are they going to go?
If they trade him, do you think, well, first of all, do you think they can trade him with this contract?
I think so. Yeah, well, you know, it's not going to be netting a lot. I mean, what you're probably talking about is kind of a Joe Flacco type of deal where he went for a fourth round pick.
Okay.
And then you saw the Tannehill deal where, you know, basically they had to pay a whole bunch of money just to move Tannehill out of Miami. So,
yeah.
No, I think that they probably can get some value, but what you're looking at is a third, fourth round pick more than likely.
We were talking about the quarterback contracts, and you thought the top four, maybe five free agents could be all quarterback deals. Yeah. Is that good news for Seattle when it comes to Jadeveon Clowney? Because I think they're waiting and wondering how much are other teams going to be willing to spend on
him. No, it doesn't affect them anyway because, again, Clowney's going to be one of the highest paid defensive players out there. And now some stories are starting to surface that, you know, not just $21 million, he may want kind of a Khalil Mack type of deal, which is 23. I mean, trying to become maybe the highest paid defensive player in the market. And if that's going to be the case, it's going to be tough for this team to re-sign him. So, but again, I think that he will give them some kind of a discount because, I mean, I think he realizes this team's a good fit for him. This is the one team that he can stay with and then, you know, maybe have a chance to go deeper into the playoffs.
I got one question. Do you think Seattle could sell him on 1 year type of deal at huge money? Like, because isn't that essentially what Darrell Revis did at one point? And I know that didn't work out well for Revis, but pitching it to him of like, hey, you're guaranteed to get this money in the first year, and then you might be back on the market a year from now.
Yeah, no, I think that he'll want security, you know, because again, that's like, you know, you can see emotionally how tough that was for him last year, you know, going through the franchise tag, and then to basically, you know, take 3 years out of the middle of your career and go on 1 year deals, you know, because again, you figure, okay, maybe you go someplace next year after 2020. No, I think, you know, he has a chance to get long-term security now. Now I think he gets it.
Professor, we're very grateful, no more so than this month as the lead-up to free agency, all your knowledge of the salaries. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
That is John Clayton. You can hear him from 10 to noon, The John Clayton Show. Coming up next, there are only two things that I can think of that get beaten more regularly than dead horses. One is the trash can outside the Astros clubhouse. The other is the discussion of what to do about the Astros banging on that trash can outside their clubhouse. We're going to wail on that dead horse next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Guys, this Astros cheating scandal is never going away. When it comes to this... I don't think so, Danny. I think this is something that's going to last for the entirety of this year, and it honestly might last years to come. I'm not really sure that baseball could have done anything punishment-wise that would have appeased the rest of the sport, but certainly what the commissioner decided to do did not appease Nick Markakis, who will play audio later on in the show. He says that the Astros deserve a beating. You heard Cody Bellinger weigh in on it. You heard Chris Bryant have some harsh words for the Astros. Even Mike Trout, of all people, had harsh words for the way that things were handled. So whatever the case, firing Hinch and Luno after suspending them and not punishing the players, it's not being received well in baseball circles.
It certainly isn't. And in some ways, baseball releasing what it found out has, I don't know if it's made it worse, but it's certainly heightened the expectation for further punishment. I don't know if they'd come out and done anything if the reaction, if they could have quelled this reaction, but it almost seems like how Major League Baseball handled it has accentuated the objections. That's heightened the objections.
Right. And explained it. All, you know, maybe if they hadn't explained how they came to their eventual decisions, because their big thing has been, well, we just want everyone to know the truth. We're not going to punish anybody for the truth. We just want everyone to know what actually happened. Manfred did a one-on-one interview with Carl Ravitch of ESPN, and when asked why the Astros players specifically weren't punished more, here is what he had to say.
I understand people's desire to have the players pay a price for what went on here. I think if you watch the players, watch their faces when they have to deal with this issue publicly, they have paid a price. To think that they're skipping down the road into spring training happy, that's just a mischaracterization of where we are. Having said that, the desire to have actual discipline imposed on them, I understand it. And in a perfect world, it would have happened. We ended up where we ended up in pursuit of really, I think, the most important goal, and that is getting the facts and getting them out there for people.
The most amusing part of that little clip of audio to me, Danny, is where Manfred says, well, you're just going to see their little faces. Their sad little faces as they answer these questions. Like, that's a real punishment. So I wonder if that's even a start as far as punishments go. Maybe
I actually think shame's a pretty good punishment. I do think it matters. And I think shame and being subject to scorn and having them singled out, I do think that matters. Whether it matters enough, I mean, Barry Bonds was never suspended for steroids. Has he been punished? I would say he's hugely been punished.
Blackballed essentially by the game?
Yeah, and not allowed into the Hall of Fame. Basically everything that he's done, and he was a Hall of Fame player before he became enormo home run hitter. He's basically been wiped away. Look, I mean, honestly, is that a sufficient punishment? I think some people will say, no, it's not, but it's not nothing. It is that they're being trotted out there and everybody gets to make fun of them for a while.
Shame right now is not enough. Down the road, shame will be enough because this is something that's going to follow them forever. And I think that some people are looking at the short-term ramifications and they look at the Astros and they say, this is still one of the best teams in baseball, and they're probably going to have a chance at winning a World Series this coming season, and there really are no consequences that they face for what they might have done to win a World Series and get to a World Series in the last 3 years. And, you know, when you have that as something that people are constantly thinking about, that's a problem. What's interesting is that Manfred actually did think about the idea of taking the trophy away, and when he thought about it, he ultimately decided that he didn't want to do that. Here's why.
The idea of, you know, an asterisk or asking for a piece of metal back seems, you know, sort of a futile act. People are always know that there was something about the 2017 World Series that was different. And they're going to know that because whether we made every decision right or wrong, we undertook a really thorough investigation, and we had the intestinal fortitude to put out there the facts we found, even though they weren't very pretty.
The intestinal fortitude. Laughable. Laughable, a couple of words to finish that up.
I agree. That's stupid, and calling it a piece of metal is dumb.
Yes.
I agree with his point. I actually think that stripping and retroactively going back and vacating things, I think is a meaningless punishment. I mean, I guess they don't get the trophy to put in their trophy case, so maybe that hurts them a little bit. But does that really matter? Does it really matter? Do you think of USC as having not won the college football?
No one won the national title that season, right? Exactly.
That's not true. We all think that
that and know that they did. John Calipari's never been to a Final Four with UMass.
It's true.
Or previously when he was with...
Never happened.
No, of course he has. Of course he has. Like, those sort of things when he was with Memphis, like, just because they get... I tend to think that the NCAA, which loves to vacate things, those are the most meaningless punishments in the world because everybody knows what actually happened.
But those are... Some of those are for reasons that I don't think people would say are as egregious as this. This is sort of an unprecedented level of impact on the game and of, like, systemic, sustained cheating.
Now, that's an interesting point, Lydia. I think that that's because this actually affects, and I would agree with you that it's not antiquated notions of amateurism in the NCAA, that it's actually like having one-upsmanship, like you actually had an inside edge. I can get that part of the argument.
It's different, and you can also prove that there was an in-game effect. This wasn't something that maybe could be used for another game like Spygate with the Patriots. This was happening in real time, all of it, and there had to have been some sort of effect that they only punish by saying, okay, we're suspending Hinch, we're suspending Luno. They end up both getting fired, and no players get punished. When the facts find that the seems like it was a player's designed movement, that to me makes no sense.
Also, Rob Manfred, quit outsourcing the most difficult part of your job. If you're just expecting everyone else to punish the Astros because of shame, isn't that him just outsourcing a really tough part of his job?
Yeah,
you guys will handle it. Go ahead. You're not getting paid, but do it.
That's a fair point. I would say this, though. History tends to get these things right. Do you remember who won the 1919 World Series, the one that the White Sox threw?
No, but I only remember the 1919 Black Sox coming out of it.
Exactly. Like, we tend to get those things right. That's what we tend to remember, is that when everybody... Nobody's going to say, like, the Astros finally broke through and run their first... 20 years from now, it's going to be... No, they were the ones that were banging on a trash can because they knew what was coming. Like, that's actually... History does tend to get these things right. So I don't want to say that, like, oh, it would mean nothing, because going and taking the trophy away from him and not letting Jim Crane publicize it... And by the way, it was the Cincinnati Reds that were in the 1919 World Series against the Black Sox. We tend to remember things in the correct way. We tend to get it right, even when baseball can't officially get it. The other thing I think nobody's mentioning is I don't think Manfred could punish the players.
Clearly.
Like I don't think he could. That doesn't mean he shouldn't have. That doesn't mean he shouldn't have and let it get overturned on appeal and say, raise his hands and say, look, this is the players union. You guys go deal with those knuckleheads. These players won't even let me discipline themselves. So as much as Cody Bellinger and Evan Turner want to rip on me, it's their own union that's standing in the way of me punishing players. But I basically think he couldn't punish players. So the idea of giving them immunity wasn't some big sacrifice, because whether it was the notification that you had to have, it's a collective bargaining issue. So I'm sure that you can't go back 2 years later and say, hey, for this thing you did a long time ago, now you're going to get punished.
You've seen The Dark Knight Rises, right? You know that
part?
You, okay, so...
Is that the Joker movie or is that Bane?
This is with Bane. So there's a point...
Oh, that movie stinks.
No, it's not. It's great, because Bane's voice is amazing. So there's a
I love that take, Danny.
There's a point midway through the movie where Bane is confronted by these two rich guys who have essentially funded everything. And this guy says, I've given you an unlimited fortune. What are you doing here? And Bane goes, you think this gives you power over me? And at that point, that's the Major League Baseball Players Union right now with Manfred. Manfred sounds so weak, so sackless in this situation. And here's the thing. People are never going to be happy with anything he does going forward because of the way that he handled this. Because people are always going to nitpick and pinpoint this as a moment where he failed to be strong. And look, if you take away a trophy, the people that you're really only punishing is a fan base. Does the fan base deserve to be punished? I'm not 100% sure. I don't think so personally, having been in that city while that happened. The organization is the thing that should have been punished.
The fan base doesn't deserve to be punished? You can't take this title that their team cheated for away from them because the fans deserve it?
Well, I mean, if you take away a trophy, isn't that who you ultimately are punishing?
Yeah, but
they're cheering for something that their team cheated for. I don't believe in retroactive punishments, but I guess I'm not losing sleep over the idea that Houston might wake up tomorrow morning and feel like, oh, no, we can't cheer for that anymore.
Well, it is. I think if you were someone who lived there and it was in the months after Hurricane Harvey and you lost everything and that was what got you through it, yeah, that would stink if all of a sudden, yes, this is a lie and I'm being punished because of this after the worst time of my life.
Yeah, I could see that, but I also look back when the Washington Huskies got put on probation from 90 to for things they did from 90 to 92 when Billy Joe Hobert was getting a loan from a rocket scientist and buying Camaros and trashing them on the side of the road. Like, I didn't look back and it was like, well, you ruined that for me. I kind of think, well, we still got the national championship. That counts. The 2 years of bowl eligibility that we lost, that stunk. Then we had the purple helmets. Yeah, it's kind of all price. I'd go on probation 2 years for a Rose Bowl, no problem.
I do think the idea of taking away a title is an interesting one, though, because at this point, like, Manfred did not do enough, and this is never going away. This is going to be an all-season story, and people are going to be asked what the Astros should have had done to them every single time that they have a series against them. Like, this is all that we're going to hear. It's going to be fascinating. We're going to hear people like Nick Markakis say that they need a beating, but it's also ultimately a black eye if they can't get past this at some point, and they don't seem anywhere close to being close to that.
Can I tell you what my problem with Bane is in The Dark Knight? It's The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
Because The Dark Knight with the Joker is awesome. It's too long. They shouldn't have the Two-Face part in, but the Joker's phenomenal. Bane is the world's strongest guy, right? He breaks Batman's back. All of a sudden, you take off his mask and you show he's got a little wonky suck hole and he becomes a big weenie who's crying in an enormous baby.
I need oxygen to fight the Batman.
It's ridiculous. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, now he's like Chunk from Goonies. This ruins it.
There's another plot point in that movie. Like, all of a sudden, hey, Bruce Wayne meets this random woman and all of a sudden they have this extreme relationship when he's basically been a recluse for 10 years because his previous girlfriend died, and all of a sudden he's like being vulnerable with this person who ultimately stabs him. Anyway, lots of spoiler alerts along the way. Danny Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. I went to the Seattle Dragons game against the Tampa Bay Vipers on Saturday. How did the XFL do in its first shindig right here in Seattle? We'll tell you next on Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
The XFL unveiled in Seattle over the weekend. It was a pretty good show. The appearances on TV, it looked great. The lower bowl looked full. It was an exciting game. The offense left a little bit to be desired, and I think in general that's probably been true for the first 2 weeks of the league, but their early indications are that there's a group of people, especially in Seattle, who are behind it and give this a shot.
Yeah, and you know what? I got to say, like, when you look at the crowd and what we saw from everyone who showed up, it was loud. It was, I thought, a really, really good environment for a football game that maybe didn't have the highest level of play. There's something to build off here, but you got to find a way to captivate everyone and keep it captivated going forward. I will say the offense was tough to watch at times. And while it was fun to watch the Dragons sit back on defense and that Keenan Reynolds 68-yard touchdown was cool, for the most part, it was like watching trench warfare in World War I Europe, obviously significantly less graphic, but everyone was just struggling to get the smallest of gains. You got to find a way to get more out of the offense than that. I don't know how you do it, but unfortunately, the old blood and guts football that maybe we miss in the NFL, maybe this is what it was.
Do you like it? And because, I mean, that's an honest question, because look, the absence of offense is notable. They haven't had a 300-yard passer. They have not had a 300-yard rusher. They came close. One of the players, it was Cameron Artis Payne of the Dallas Renegades. He had 99 yards rushing on Saturday. You've had a couple 100-yard receivers, but look, the Vipers finished in single digits. That's happened in half of the games. They played 8 games in the XFL. 4 of them have included a team that didn't get to double digits. I think it's been a pretty good product, but it's certainly skewed toward the defensive side, or the offenses have not looked potent.
No, they haven't at all. And I don't think they will. Ultimately, when we were watching the game, no offense to Brandon Silvers, but, I mean, we were leading the movement to put B.J. Daniels in the game. Now, he did throw the 68-yard touchdown pass for Silvers a little bit later. But at this point, I'm almost like, let's play some musical chairs at quarterback and figure out if you actually do have a guy that stands out compared to everyone else. Because I think for the most part, these guys are all on about the same playing field. And a guy like Brandon Silvers, you're really telling me there's a difference between he and B.J. Daniels? I doubt it.
Doesn't this open up an opportunity? And this is the reaction. There's the two main reactions I've had watching the XFL. The first is, how is it possible that this league in its second week already has a better replay process than the NFL does, which I firmly believe that it is a better replay process that they have than what the NFL does. The second part is, isn't this the perfect opportunity to introduce new wrinkles? Shouldn't you be willing to have mobile quarterbacks? Why don't you have multiple quarterbacks? Why are they going with the same template that NFL teams use, which is your quarterback's your quarterback, and you don't want to take too many chances with your quarterback because your quarterback gets hurt. Every indication is that all of these quarterbacks, none of them are great. And so if you would lose a not great quarterback, the downside should be significantly less. I think there's an opportunity for more of that. I think there's an opportunity for more unorthodox football as opposed to trying to do NFL-like when it comes to the offense.
You're right on that. The problem is, I think a lot of these guys are trying
NFL coaches?
Yeah, there are ex-NFL coaches that might be trying to use this to get back into the NFL, of all things.
Let's get the guy that coaches the kids in Texas. What's it, Pulaski? The team that never punts and constantly onside kicks. Let's get that guy involved here. Let's have a team that doesn't have a punter. Like, nope, we're just not going to punt. We're going to go for it every fourth down. This, honestly, and Trestman did that in the game, right? They were down, was it 14-9, and he decides to punt with about 5 minutes left to go. I was like, why are you doing
that? It was so NFL. You're right.
Come on.
Yeah.
Don't. Go for it. Let's go. And instead, you do see this NFL light. I think it looks really professional. In a way that I never thought the AAF looked professional. I think the uniforms look good. I think when you look at them, it looks like a well outfitted college team is what it looks like. And I think that stuff matters when you're trying to present a product like this.
I agree. And thus far, the crowd has been the biggest surprise. People have cared at these games. They have enjoyed themselves. How do you keep that? Because I was blown away by the crowd. I thought they did an awesome job. They were a lot of fun. They were loud in the appropriate moments. I'm sure that this is just a thing that I should come to expect with Seattle sports teams. But honestly, I wasn't sure that this would happen for the first week where people would be that into it. They were. And I think that's the one thing it has going for it right now is that the in-game experience has actually been pretty good if you actually attend the game, which I think for a lot of people going to an NFL game, it has stopped being that. You're priced out. You're sitting up in the 300 levels if you're not someone who's loaded, and it's hard to see the action. But when you're down close to the action and the crowd's going the way that it's going, it's a fun time.
It looks great. Now, Brock was available, correct?
Yes.
Brock was out there. Did you heckle him?
Yes, he came by. We heckled him a little bit. Brock has someone carrying an umbrella behind him for a little bit.
He has a caddy?
Yeah, he has an umbrella caddy, yes, to keep him looking sharp and prim and fresh on the sideline.
We're going to have to ask him about that.
Yes.
It's Danny and Gallant coming up next. Brock Huard joins us for Blue 42.